This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Good Sunday morning, Arnie Sherman.
You know, this winter is just beginning, but I feel like it's been here long enough already.
Oh.
You know, with global warming, you don't know where it's going to be. You don't get any sympathy either. I talked to my friends back east. It's 12 degrees in Washington, D.C. It's zero in Arkansas. So you don't get anybody even giving you any, you know, good pats on the back for having to persevere what we've been going through around here. So it's good to be in the studio. It's good that we can see some sunlight out there a little bit and to talk about one of the most complex issues that face every person in this country, which is the cost of real estate, the cost of housing. You know, ever since I can remember, no matter where I lived, whether it was in East Coast, whether it was in Chicago, whether it was in Kansas City, didn't matter wherever I lived, there was always a discussion, a contemporary discussion about housing costs are too high, there's no affordable housing, this is a constant, lifelong battle, which has no solution. You know, it's like rats in the New York subway system. You can, they're there your whole life. There's nothing you can do about it. You can try to fight them, but you can't win. You can't win the real estate discussion at all.
I know. It's such a it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, you know, interest rates go up, and then inventory goes down because people aren't selling. Therefore, rents go up, and you know, housing projects. I mean, take a look at Missoula. We're about 2,000 units behind the demand here.
There's so, that much demand.
Yeah, it's that much demand. Some people moving in, people getting older or growing up or graduating and wanting to live on their own. I mean, all sorts of things. Interest rates go up, you know, as they were high as almost 8% in October, and then now they're down around 6%. But you're not going to see any new increase in inventory here in Missoula unless the interest rates go down to 5%.
So there's going to be such little activity. Arnie, I read a statistic that pre-pandemic, the median household price was across the United States, $290,000. Post-pandemic, it's like $440,000.
Yeah, well, look what's happened in Missoula. Last
year, what's Missoula?
The median sales price in Missoula was $558,000.
Wow.
You know, up 4.2% from 2022. And in Bozeman, the median price was $748,000, up 10% from the previous year. You know, and this is not just a Missoula issue. It's not just a Montana issue. I go visit relatives in Ohio. They're complaining about how expensive everything is. I'm looking around at properties there, and they've gone up. And part of this is a hollow a reality. You know, I'll give you an interesting statistic that I just saw. A house that is $500,000 at 7% interest. Interest drops 1 point, and people say, well, I can buy now. But the price will go up equivalently to $550,000. So the difference between a house at $500,000 at 7% and $550,000 at 6% on a 30-year mortgage, $9 a month.
You're kidding.
No, there's no virtually no difference. But people react or overreact. They're afraid to, you know, they're afraid to buy at high interest rates. People are afraid to sell when the interest rates are high because then they got to buy something else or move into something else. You know, there are people in the commercial side of things. There was a segment recently on 60 Minutes about how devastating it is in New York. Unless you have a primo location, like right above Grand Central Station, you know, or something like that, there's 40, 50% vacancies in the buildings there.
Amazing.
You know, and when those leases come due, you're going to have a really, a very difficult decision to make. You know, do you go to your landlord and ask for a big rate reduction? Do you scale down the number of, the amount of space? What does the landlord do? There was a segment, I only caught part of it, but somebody pre-pandemic offered $80 million for a building down near Madison Square Garden, and the guy wouldn't take $80 million. They just bought it post-pandemic for $32 million.
Really?
Yeah. That much difference.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just but again, as I said, I talk to people all over the country, whether it's Las Vegas, whether it's L.A., whether it's New York, whether it's small towns, Hamilton, Ohio. You got the same problem. You know, limited inventory and increasing demand for, you know, to, you know, upgrade your life. People are doing, you know, financially pretty okay. The unemployment rate's very low. People are working. Inflation is low. People are saving money. Inflation has come down a bit.
Right. Record low.
Record low. So you got all this stuff going on. So people have the means to buy into the market, but because of all of this kind of fluctuation and lack of understanding of what it all means and inability to pull the trigger for the wrong reason, not for the right reason. You know, you could buy something at 7% now and be paying a little bit more a month because you got a deal on it, and then refinance in 2 years.
And then the deal's better.
What's it going to cost you for 2 years? Even if it's $100 more a month, it costs you $2,500 over 2 years, and then you refinance down.
Arnie, I see a real estate advice show in your future.
No. I'm just saying, but the problem is, I've never lived where someone said, there's a lot of affordable property out there.
No, that's true.
Or real estate. Everything keeps going up. When you think it won't go up, you know, you were lucky enough to score a place up on Flathead Lake.
Right.
Back in 1995, when I first was looking, came to Montana and bought a vacation place.
Right.
A place with 200 feet of lakefront was $150,000.
No.
And people were telling me then, too expensive. Yeah, that's too expensive. Ridiculous.
I know. This always I think back to those days too.
Right.
You're right.
1995, 150 grand for a 1200 square foot place, right, with 200 feet of lake,
right,
was too much money.
Too much.
You know, the Californians, you know, right, back even then, the Californians are ruining the real estate market here.
You can't even get you can't even do a refurb,
You can't redo a
cosmetic
kitchen.
Right, a kitchen.
You can't do a bathroom and a kitchen for $150 grand. You know, so now you say, well, you can't get anything for under $1 million. That's crazy. Who's going to pay $1 million, you know?
Easily.
So, yeah, exactly. So as a lead-in for today, we have Leslie and Ed Weatherby.
Yes.
Who are the
return guests.
Return guests.
Many times we've had them on.
Yes, several times, who are the developers of the old Sawmill District, one of the most successful, you know, mixed-use real estate projects in Missoula history, probably.
Sure.
They took an old sawmill, you know, that was a waste site, an environmental hazard site, and converted it. And, you know, now there's lots of things going on. There's some new products that are being brought to the market as we speak. So Leslie and Ed will be joining us today to talk about what's going on with the old sawmill, what are some of the new products, what does that community look like, how many people are living there, what's the future like, and how does it fit in to the future of Missoula real estate.
Can't wait. Love having them on. It's always a good conversation. We learn a lot.
Right. And they put their money and their hearts where their mouth was. And so it's great to have them in here and talking about this labor of love that's been going on now for 20 years.
Yeah, I know. This is not, they didn't just arrive here. They've worked their way to this moment, which is great. When we come back, our guests will be Ed and Leslie Weatherby. Back after this. Arnie Sherman, we are back with Leslie and Ed Weatherby.
Leslie, Ed, it's great to have you back on the show. You have a lot of exciting things to share with us about new products at the old Sawmill District. But for our listeners who aren't familiar with the genesis of this 46-acre project along the Clark Fork River, why don't you just tell us about the 20-year history?
Great. Well, and thanks for having us here, Arnie. The short version of the story is that about 20 years ago, I had a nice meeting with Mayor Mike Kadis, and he was describing this problem with the abandoned sawmill, the abandoned industrial site across the river, and was anxious to see something good happen with it. And we were excited to do something in Missoula, and off we went.
It was really an exciting thing for me because I was born and raised here, as was my father. And so I had grown up, you know, coming down that big hill and going to the Big T and seeing the teepee burners and, you know, and then seeing it for many, many years as I took my kids to swimming, seeing it as an abandoned lumber mill. And so it was very exciting to be part of that and to really take an area that had been so lively before and had just fallen into a state of disrepair and abandonment and take it and make it something cool again.
So back then, did you think it was going to take this long to get to where you are now?
No, I had no idea. No idea, Arnie. We were fortunate and we joined forces with a partner, a person who became a partner of mine, Kevin Mitty. And it was 2003 when we began work. We had to start from annexation to platting to tearing down all the old stuff. And it wasn't until about 2015 that we were actually had all the approvals in place that we could actually build something.
And in 2016 is when Poly Squares, the condominiums, were first brought to market. Is that correct?
That's when we closed on the first sales. Yes,
right,
we were actually doing pre-sales and selling. Yes, we started construction in 2015. First building was finished 2016.
So our thought, Arnie, at that time is that we thought we would be creating lots and selling them in 5 or 6 years, and we would be off doing something else. And so here we are 20 years later.
So tell us what the development looks like now. What is the Old Sawmill?
The Old Sawmill District, the intention is that it is a true district. It's a integrated part of the city, yet has its own identity. We wanted to create community, a lively place to be with lots of different types of residential product and commercial product and restaurants, food and beverage. Great place to be.
We like to call it a pedestrian village. It has everything you need right there, and you can just walk around and, you know, you can walk home, you can walk to a restaurant, you can go have coffee, you can go have lunch, you can go see your financial advisor, you can go to see your physical therapist, you can go to the gym, and you can take a short walk and you're going to be downtown.
In the park. Through the park.
Through the park.
So as we enter 2024, how many people are living and working in the Old Sawmill District?
We have, well, we are about a third of the way through the potential for the development. And we have a little over, I counted it up, and I think about 540 people living there. We have 100,000 square feet of office. You know, it's hard to count exactly how many people work there. And with today's world of remote working, it's even more difficult to measure. But nonetheless, it's active, very active.
So you have the Sawyer, which is a student housing project. You have apartments at Cambion Place. You have condos. Mm-hmm. You have a campus, a tech campus. So how in your mind does that all fit together before we talk about what new is going to be added?
Good question. we went at it thinking to ourselves that there were a number of pieces and parts that were missing in the Missoula landscape. And what a great place to bring it all together with people, as Leslie said, live, work, play, really creating that village, creating that community where you literally can walk to work or walk to you know, a neighborhood restaurant or bar or whatever.
Plus, you can walk to the university because you have how many students are in the student housing or in Sawyer?
Yeah, there's
we have 218 beds at the Sawyer. And it's really nice because UDASH now comes to right at Old Sawmill District. So we have a bus that picks them up, drops them off several times a day. It's free. And we see a lot of students and other people taking advantage of that. It's really nice.
And the trail access is one of the most beautiful trails in the city, right along the river.
Right.
The riverfront trail between home and the university. That's pretty nice.
One of our favorite stories is that we have one couple who bought a condo at Poly Square, and they moved here from Austin, Texas. And they started out just going to be, you know, coming here and retiring in 5 years. And after 1 year, they said, forget it, we're retiring now and we're moving. We're going to be here full time. And I laugh because when they moved there, we saw them 3 months later. And he told us, he said, I filled up my car. I filled the tank up with gas, and it's been 3 months and I still have a half a tank.
That's
impressive. Good.
Yeah.
That's
but that brings up the other question. What kind of mix is there? How many people are moving in to the apartments and the condos that are Missoulians, and how many people are coming back or are new to the community?
We have a lot of people who were living in Missoula, decided they wanted to downsize, and it was amazing the number of people that were already here in Missoula that chose to purchase or rent at Poly's Cambium. Mm-hmm. And we have a number of others who came here because their kids went to school here and they came to visit and fell in love with it.
Sure.
We have others who grew up here and went off and did their career somewhere else. Or they came here and graduated from the University of Montana and went and did their career somewhere else and they wanted to come back.
And we've got a really cool mix of folks at Sawyer who are students from all over the country. Great mix of folks.
Did Sawyer, what was the impact of COVID? You know, the university shut down basically when COVID was going on. And we've seen lower enrollment. And then this past fall, we had an increase in enrollment. How has that roller coaster affected the occupancy rate at a student housing project like Sawyer.
Well, I have to admit, Arnie, I was nervous. When we got notice that the university was closing down that year, I thought, oh my gosh, we're in for a tough ride here. But to our surprise, and actually, it was just beautiful. We saw so many students who decided that they wanted to be here. They wanted to stay at their place. And they wrote it out as remote students. Maybe not remote. They were here in town, but they just weren't going to class.
There was also a fun story there where there were four girls who had been best friends in high school, all four going to different colleges, none of which were the University of Montana, and they were all doing remote schooling. So they decided to all move to Missoula, to the Sawyer, be roommates. And they were all attending four different colleges.
Right. And they didn't want to go home and live with their parents. I understand that.
Right. And we talked. I could think of a lot worse places to live than Missoula, Montana during the pandemic.
Right.
Right. We looked like geniuses.
Right.
When the pandemic hit for all of our friends back on the East Coast, they're like, how are you so smart to think of Montana and Missoula? One of the things when I worked back east, I used to work in Dulles, Virginia for AOL. And that's where I first was introduced to kind of that town center concept. Mm-hmm. I think it was Reston Center. Mm-hmm. And I think Tyson's was another one. Mm-hmm. So is that really the impetus and kind of that concept of like really where everything is right there? Do you see ultimately growing into that where you have a supermarket, a hotel, just other products and commercial tenants to really create that environment?
Yeah, and every one that you're talking about is just a little bit different too.
It's big too. It's
yeah, yeah, much bigger than we'd have here. I want to say yes, but I also want to say that every piece of the puzzle has to stand on its own economically. And in terms of supporting capital, has to support investors and such.
Sure.
And so it's not as though we can be the master planners and just wish it and make it happen. Everything has to stand on its own. And I say that because, for example, we really wanted to have a grocery store, a market in the neighborhood.
Right.
And with the COVID years and the internet brought this on with home delivery and of course, internet shopping, it made margins and the prospect of a neighborhood market pretty tough. But nonetheless, I still hope that happens.
Yeah. That being said, we do have three grocery stores all within just blocks of Old Sawmill.
Right,
right. Yes.
You're right there. And well, look, and what I also marvel at is like those neighborhood kind of like the Trough or Rattlesnake. What is it? The Rattlesnake Grocery.
Yeah.
Like I love those as like mm-hmm. that's a great kind of like curated kind of dine-in, take-out, and mm-hmm. to purchase.
So Take Lear opened a second location, as you know, during 2023, and we were so excited to have them come mm-hmm. in. But they do have a little market there.
They do.
And it's really cool. It's really fun. We love having them there.
By the way, it's the only place I will go to now get tag there is there. Because the parking is so much better.
Isn't it?
Right.
We hear that a lot.
Well, plus you have a range. You have Orange Street Market, and then you have Good Food Store, both triangulated.
Within blocks.
Yeah.
It's right there.
So you mentioned it's only one third developed in terms of what the whole vision mm-hmm. could be.
Right.
Is the vision driven more by looking internally inside the old Sawmill District and what pieces fit in there? Or is it also driven by the needs of the greater Missoula, real estate market? Where, as I understand it, 2,000 units behind demand, and those units that are in demand may not fit into the old Sawmill's, context. So how are you thinking about, growing the development and what products are you thinking about bringing in?
There's a lot of questions in that question.
Sure.
I think our plan really comes about from seeing what's needed in the community, but also what is complementary to our Old Sawmill District. And I'd like to say we do everything in a boutique or a niche kind of a way, in that we build 69 apartments. Our next project might be 190 multifamily for rent project, but it's not building 3,000 of them like like one would maybe think is going on out here on Mullen, right? And so in that case, for example, the projections are that for the next couple of years, things will be overbuilt because of all that product coming on here. But what we're thinking about is we're going to start some stuff right now, so it'll come online about the time that the market has absorbed most of that other product. So we think about it in that way. We also think about it in, you know, if we're going to do something 10 of something or 50 of something, we're not going to move the market needle, but we're going to create something cool for the neighborhood. So,
Leslie, talk about the two most recent new products that have been added to the sawmill.
Yes. So we started building our townhomes, which have been absolutely beautiful. So before with condos, you know, we have certain people who like being in a building where they have a big shared area. We had a certain amount of people who really wanted to have that yard. They wanted to have a little piece of ground. Mm. They wanted to not have people above them or below them. And so we had planned on doing townhomes at some point. So we went ahead and started out with those. We've closed on 5 of them now. People who live there just absolutely love it. It's so wonderful. Hmm. You know, I think almost all of them have pets. And so we're continuing to build townhomes. They're bigger. They have 2-car garages. They've got incredible rooftop decks. We're going to continue with more townhomes that will maybe not be quite as big, but still have that feel. But then we're also coming out with a new project that is called Warehouse Flats. And we just released that to the market about 2 weeks ago. And that's really exciting. So it's another condo project, but we're really trying to hit a price point that makes it easier for people to manage.
Right.
And, you know, they're for people who maybe they're a single person or a couple who don't have kids. It's going to be hard because they're a studio flat, or they can be a one-bedroom or one-bedroom and a den and one bath. So, but they're very, very cool. And that's 3 floors. We're having parking on ground floor along with 1 unit, which is our ADA unit, and then 2 floors, 9 units on each floor, and an elevator. They're
storage.
Yeah, it's got storage. The parking is secure. 4 of the units will have covered parking. The rest of them are all inside a parking garage. And it's going to hit that 450 mark. They're starting all around 450. Then there's different options that they can do if they want to upgrade them. So what I've been hearing is it's going to be the perfect place for my mother to live when, you know, she's going to move out here, or she needs to downsize from her house, or someone else is retiring and they don't want to be there anymore, you know, or they, you know, they don't want to have this big of a house to take care of. Or you've got a young couple who is just starting out and they're not planning to have kids for a while.
Right.
Or, you know, maybe choosing not to have kids. And or there's people that we know that are minimalists and they don't want to have a lot of extra stuff. And these are perfect.
So now we have product in the old sawmill, putting aside the sawyer, the student housing, that run from about 800 square feet all the way up to 2,000 square feet. So there's a lot of options available
Someone's
coming to look at the development. And one of the things, you know, Scott and I have talked about before, it all depends on where you're coming from. What is resizing for some people, it's tough for someone to go from 3,000 square feet to, let's say, 800 square feet. Mm-hmm. But if you're moving here from San Francisco or Seattle or L.A. or New York, mm-hmm. 800 square feet is a typical nice apartment.
It's an acre.
Yeah. No, they go for $7,000 in New York City for 800 square feet.
You're exactly right.
It's
all perspective.
Yep.
It's also going to be great for, you know, there might be people who come to the Grizzly games every weekend, whether it's football or basketball or whatever, and they want to have their place in Missoula.
Right.
Or they like to come here because they like to engage in the arts, and they don't want to pay for a hotel every time they come.
Sure.
And they really want to have their Missoula place.
Or people who are getting, you know, to retirement age and say, well, do we have one $900,000 place, or do we have a $450,000 place in Missoula and a $450,000 place in Arizona?
Right.
And just, you know, go back and forth.
You know, in the very early days, Arnie, we thought a lot about what would future living look like. And a lot of things are happening out there. And one of them is called Age in Place, where there's so many services now, and the whole healthcare part of aging has changed. And so we look at folks who, you know, they can get out and they can walk the park. They can walk downtown. They have access to all kinds of great things. And that's not something that a lot of people were accustomed to. And so when they start thinking about restructuring their lifestyle or whatever, having a place like that and having access to that kind of activity is a wonderful thing.
Well, it's always been the way that Europeans have lived, right? Mm-hmm. Small apartments, you shower, you sleep, you have breakfast maybe, and the rest of the time you're out doing things.
Right.
You're out and about. Bicycling is very important, getting to and from. I think it's incredible. I think it's so smart. It's and if you look and you especially I spend a lot of time on social media for my work. not personal. But you see a lot of people that are into minimalism, to your point, Leslie. It's like minimalism, less is more. Less to care for, less to have to clean up.
Less stress.
Yes. Less stress. Mm-hmm. Right. It's actually exactly. It's proportionate to your amount of stress is how big of a piece of property you have to care for. Do you feel like the city itself and the county is also providing services to further enhance that mindset, that lifestyle? Like, hey, the town, right, is, you know, creating access to the town. You have the ballpark. You have concerts. Mm-hmm. You have all these other things that, to Arnie's point, like as Europeans, they look to all these other places to kind of spend their leisure time.
Absolutely.
And to recreate. And that's who we are as a community.
I think that that's the culture here, right? I mean, it's a recreation-focused community.
That focuses on the arts as well.
And the arts. With I'm the sorry. Arts. Not, right. to, not right. to ignore that, for sure.
Well, I think there's been a change in Missoula, at least in the 25 years I've been here. There used to be, maybe because there weren't as many cultural and, you know, restaurant kinds of venues to go to, but people used to do more and more things in their home. Mm-hmm. And now people are meeting more and more at restaurants or at events or at activities rather than having a party at your house.
Right.
And I think the party at your house was because there wasn't a better option. And now there are plenty of better options.
Or the shared resource or the shared community, you know, parts of the property that Old Sawmill has.
You're living at the Old Sawmill. You get to know your neighbors. You want to meet for coffee. You go meet them at the Dog and Bicycle. You don't ask them to come over for coffee. You say, let's go meet. You know, then you have a place to have lunch. You have a place to have dinner. There's, you know, there's
or
options.
Or the co-working space.
The co-working space.
I like the co-working
space. Having that is like having an extra space in your own house that you don't need. You can share it with your neighbors as you get to know your neighbors.
And it's not a far walk to walk into town to do that as well. Right. And that's, I know, important too, is lighting and the safety of getting into town, which is what people think about. Right. And so that's why I'm saying is the city embraces this idea too, because they know this is their future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And just to give a plug for all those who do or are involved in supporting the arts, it's a wonderful thing on one end of the spectrum to walk across the bridge and catch a bus to go out to the amphitheater for concerts.
Right.
And on the other hand, it's easy to walk to the university for a symphony concert, right?
Hey, you're right there.
You're right there. And of course, all the art museums and all in between. So, it's wonderful in the diversity of the things that are available to us.
Are you finding that are there other developers in town that are also kind of supportive and embracing this because the properties that they're coming online with are in line with what you're trying to accomplish?
I would say so, yes. I think a lot of people have, they kind of are bringing, or they're promoting a lot of the same types of things that we have brought.
Right.
And so we're seeing that more and more, and we take that as a compliment.
Right. I mean, that's how I see it. I see it as like everybody's pulling in the same direction.
Right.
Right.
Well, one of the things I don't want to overlook that you contributed to, which is beyond the old sawmill residents' needs, is the creation of the park. You want to talk about how that came about?
Silver.
That's Silver Park.
Yeah, Silver Park.
Silver Park. It's a fun story. It had its challenges, of course, but we had master planned it when we gained control and we had the ability to think that way. We master planned the park so that when you take Silver Park and McCormick Park together, it's about 30 acres of park. And right in the middle of that is the baseball stadium, the concert stadium. And it just created a big city opportunity for us, place like Missoula. You know, how many places can have 30 acres of Central Park, if you want to call it that, right on the river, right? And so, yes, it was complimentary to everything we were doing, but what a great resource it is for the city.
Right, and even if you weren't so close to downtown, which you are, having a park right next to the development is something that's a very attractive amenity for a lot of people, particularly those that have pets and are not that don't have their own yard, or people that want to just go out and sit by the river. They have a they have their own private park, basically.
Yeah. And Leslie will tell you that you know, it was a difficult decision at one point, and that people will tell you to maximize, optimize the real estate value, that you should be building on the river. We should have kept that space for residential development. And
I had a lot of people that were calling, and they said, well, we want to be right on the river.
Right.
And I said, well, do you know what? Everyone is. Your house isn't on the river, but we've left the park on the river so that everyone gets to enjoy it.
Right.
And it was really the best thing, because they love where they are. They have great views, and they can just walk out their door for 2 minutes and they're at the park.
They're right there.
Well, yep. The other thing which is I think is important, you know, Providence Hospital was just picked one of the top 100 hospitals in the country and the best hospital in Missoula, for sure,
sure.
And Montana. It's Montana. Number one hospital in Montana, and it's right across the river. I mean, it's a 10-minute walk, 15-minute walk to a major, you know, research and specialty hospital, which is a huge selling point, particularly if you have, you know, people who are resizing and coming here to retire. They care about health care, and then Missoula has that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if you expand that just a little bit and think in terms of the hospital, think of the government buildings, not, you know, but a block or two away from that, and then the university buildings as a resource for employment and activities, and there's a lot going on.
So what's on the drawing board that'll be coming down the pike in the future that you can talk about?
Let's do a quick ID. Our guests are Ed and Leslie Weatherby from the old sawmill.
What's the future look like? Yeah, what does the future look like?
Crystal ball.
Well, you know us, and you know that we're always a little bit reluctant to,
right,
to have that conversation. Because, I think the worst thing that
conceptually
the worst thing that people do, and unfortunately happens too often, is there's a lot of talk about what's this is going to happen or that's going to happen, and then it doesn't.
Right.
And we don't want to be one of those. So
we're always
talking about it after it starts. But if you're going to stretch it, make us stretch a little bit. we have plans for a hotel. And that could be in the form of a neighborhood inn all the way to something with a significant national flag on it that might be 120, 150 rooms. We've had conversations with people on both ends of that spectrum. We are talking right now with a group that would help us with the development of about 190-unit multifamily for rent project. That's at the very early stages, so we'll see where that goes. But all of these things take, years to do. And if all goes well, those would come online in 2.5 to 3 years from now.
We're also working on a parking garage.
Mm-hmm. Parking garage for – actually, right, the hotel would include a parking garage so that we could help with some public parking for events there, but also for expanded office and the hotel parking. We do believe that we're going to get past some of this remote working stuff, and I think we'll see demand for more commercial office space. So there's some new commercial office buildings that are kind of early in the drawing process.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that townhome area expanding. You know, the pace of that will be market driven, but there's a lot of it. And we're excited about that too.
We have a plan for 70 to 75 townhomes in that whole area.
Wow.
I forgot how much space there is, but driving through it a couple of days ago, I was like, oh my goodness, right on the river too, which is so crazy.
So there was talk a while back about another bridge going across the Clark Fork. Is that still being contemplated by the city?
You know, Arnie, I've kind of lost track of that. Don't know.
It was a pedestrian bridge that was going to be tied
McCormick
into that
parked over
to the what was going to be the Fox Theater project, which never
materialized. Okay.
But it still makes a lot of sense with the number of people there to have another pedestrian bridge going right across.
Sure, there is a pedestrian bridge though, isn't there?
California Street.
Oh, mm-hmm. So another one.
Yeah, another one.
Got it.
Yeah, I think. Anybody at the city that's listening to this, there's a lot of good that could come from that. It has to be done correctly. Mm-hmm. There's some good and the bad that everybody knows about with regard to the California Street Bridge. So all that stuff has to be done holistically.
Well, it would make sense that at some point there will be other product on the other side of the river. I mean,
you would assume so.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's happened everywhere else where you have a river,
right,
and you have space that's available, and you know, the Fox Theater concepts that have all been thrown out there. Either the developer had some issues or the economy changed at a given time. But at some point, that will you know, converge. And there will be a development on the other side of the river, which will just, you know, add to the texture of the neighborhood area.
Which would be nice.
Which is, you know, there's very little other options close to downtown.
Another question that comes up a lot is, when will there be a street light at Orange Street and Craig Lane?
Yes.
yes. So that is actually in the works. It takes a very long time. We've been talking with the city about it and working things out. They want it to be at a certain level. The State Department, or the, what is it?
Montana
State Department
of
Highways has to be involved. So we understand it's about a 2-year process, but it is in the works.
Good. Yeah. Arnie and I have to suffer through the Broadway Flynn light. Actually, there's no suffering. It's actually great that there is that works. Right?
Yeah, mostly.
You and I love using that road
when
we come back from the ranch club.
I usually go down and wait at the light.
Right. I'm okay with the light,
though. Yeah, it's not a problem.
Well, there's a light
slow
needed
traffic
here.
Down.
Yeah, there
bit.
Is.
Yeah,
on the left turn, you can wait for a long, long time.
Yeah, during the rush hour times, it's difficult. And and as we project forward a few years and there's more people living all around, and I'm not quite sure what city planning is doing, but it just seems like Orange Street is getting busier all the time.
It is. It is.
So it'll be a good thing.
Are you guys surprised that about all this kind of like the housing? You had mentioned it before, those developments on Mullen or the ones over on Grant Creek.
Right.
These just boxes of dwellings.
Over the past 25 years, and Leslie knows this because she's been here her whole life, Missoula has morphed into a retirement, a place that people want to come to and stay.
Right.
I mean, it's listed in all the lists as the best small one of the best small towns.
Right.
It is now considered a place to retire and, you know, live, work, and play, and any combination of all that. And the COVID pandemic accelerated that because a lot of people who had the choice to move anywhere, a lot of them came to Missoula, mm-hmm. Montana. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and of course, Bozeman has seen the impact of it as well. So the role this community plays in the larger, not only Montana landscape, but the landscape of the United States as a venue to end, you know, to come and live instead of Florida or Arizona or Las Vegas, you know, has grown, and that sort of has an effect on this whole issue.
You need a place for people to live.
Place for people to live.
Yeah. To service people.
And so the thinking here is that two things. One is, you know, A city needs lots of different price points because we have a mix of incomes. We have a mix of ages. The demographics are all, you know. So every city needs to be able to do that. Then you also have the forces of construction costs and the force of what is the market willing to pay.
Sure.
And there's a squeeze going on. There has been going on where the construction costs have been going up like crazy, but And it's forced prices up, but I think you would see a lot more development if construction costs weren't so high. So there's all kinds of elements, I guess, influencing that mix. And I'm sad to see that the increase of costs and the, you know, you still have to provide a margin for investors to fund these things.
Sure.
So the net result sometimes is a boxy, uninteresting looking thing that's cheaper to build. And that is unfortunate. But you know, in our case, in our early days, we helped subsidize Homeward, and they have a nice income controlled, I guess, property on the edge of the old Sawmill District. We have been forced for a lot of reasons to go a little higher end. We're having to pay all of our own infrastructure costs, and just our costs are higher, so you have to But that's why the Warehouse Flats is such a significant thing for us, is that we're doing everything we can to drive that price down. And again, to work at that mix of.
And the talk about, you know, more rental property fits in with, I think, the thinking of, you know, Gen X and
right.
you know, younger people are this mission or this life goal of home ownership is changing a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Many people in their 20s now don't care about owning a home. They want to have a nice place to live and they're willing to rent.
Right.
Right.
And they want to simplify their lives a little
right.
bit.
They want to
enjoy
have,
experiential,
you know,
the experience.
Maybe if they have, you know, 2-3 kids and, you know, you can't find a rental place in that circumstance. But there's so many of them that I know that I've come in contact with that are happy to rent. And home ownership isn't their driving ambition and goal to show that they're successful people.
That's really true, Arnie. And I think it's interesting. And I, you know, we have 5 boys. And all in their, you know, in their young adult lives. I mean, 30 plus or minus, well, now plus
They're
30.
All 30. 30 plus.
We've heard that also. And, you know, on a personal level, we encourage people to buy homes because the earlier you start, the earlier you start to save, you know, all that stuff. When I was 30, I couldn't imagine, I mean, 60 years old seemed like 200 years away, right?
Right.
And, and so the idea of establishing some net worth or creating an opportunity right. for net worth is important. And home ownership has been a key part of that for a lot of people. Matter of fact, I think I read somewhere that most of the net worth in the baby boomer generation is through their homes.
Sure. Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your sons, what are your sons? You know, they're in their 20s. They're all
late 20s.
Late 20s. What do they think about ownership?
I think, well, my oldest is with a gal who owns her place.
Uh-huh.
Smart
so
guy.
So she moved
smart
in.
Smart guy.
It
is really smart.
Yeah, for you, particularly.
No, but I think it, you know, well, I want to encourage our boys to own homes and mm-hmm. to, it's for savings. It's equity. You're building equity.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that aspect of kind of building your financial viability seems harder with interest rates going higher. And the cost of a home, but there are places that they can enter.
You know,
and you know that's the
yeah.
thing.
I just want to get this out there too. I need to remind people. We've all seen it, but when I bought my first home, I was 30. Interest rates were 12%.
Exactly.
I had no money. Well, I had a little bit of money for a down payment, and I had a. I had a mother-in-law who basically guaranteed the loan.
Perfect.
Right? But I didn't know how we were going to afford the mortgage. I mean, it was – even with 2 incomes.
He stretched.
It was very much a stretch. And I say that because I hear so often, well, everybody should be able to buy a home and everybody should be able to rent the nicest place in town. And it never has been that way.
No, that's
I've
true.
I've never
Ever.
Not had roommates.
Ever.
Right?
Yeah.
Never not had roommates when renting an apartment and – always were stretching to get into that first home.
Well, in all the houses that I've owned, you know, Linda and I were both working when we bought them. It was always a stretch.
Yeah.
One was 18,000, one was 34,000, one
right.
was 54. It was always a stretch
even
at that
then,
time.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
That seemed like a
relative.
Lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
it's incredible because
but it is difficult. There's a lot of folks right now rolling their eyes at what we're talking about. And some of the statistics make it look and I mean it's always hard. It may be harder now than it has been. But it was never easy. I'll tell you, we know that.
It was never easy, and
no.
and it's
and always things seemed overpriced.
Right. Well,
yeah. How are you ever going to do that? I remember in 1983 in Chicago, I was renting an apartment in a 3-flat right downtown Chicago in North Fremont, and the building went for sale for $80,000, 3 apartments. And I said, no one's ever going to pay $80,000 for this building.
Yeah.
You know, the apartments in that building now rent, the 3 of them, they rent for $2,500.
$2,500.
Yeah.
Each, right?
Each.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the building's
yeah.
worth, you know, more, you know, $2 million
right.
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the message that I would like people to hear, and I certainly promote it, is, yeah, work hard, save hard. And, you know, we live in this beautiful college town. It's not like our I don't know that college towns anywhere have the highest incomes or, you know, it's you give up something for lifestyle usually, and that's unfortunate. But I think we love being here and we want to do our part.
Yeah, and you've made an amazing contribution. I think back to the first time we met in our first conversation on this show when old sawmills really just getting online and think about how much has changed. And it's been 8 years. And it's just incredible. You've made such an amazing contribution to the community. And, you know, you probably take incoming from all different angles. And that happens, right?
Right.
But at the end of the day, the community is better because of it. So that's great. I mean.
Well, thanks. We're proud of it.
That's a good thing to do.
We're proud of it. You know, it's been over $100 million built out there. And and that equates – it's counted different ways by different economists, but it's on the order of like 2,000 jobs that are created through all of this, direct, indirect, and, you know, the way money flows through communities. So it's a big deal.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. That went by too quickly. And let's do some final words right after this. Arnie, we are back with Leslie and Ed Weatherby.
Well, we hardly broached the subject of food, one of our favorite topics. We talked about the deli. We talked about every morning, going dog and bicycle. But you have probably the premier dining spot in Missoula in the Boxcar Bistro. So tell us about it.
More than just that we love it?
Yeah. It's hard getting a reservation sometimes to get it, to go there. Because it's not very large.
Well, Boxcar Bistro it's named to be, I guess, to give homage to the whole industrial rail stuff that was going on here historically for a long time. But we wanted it to be this cool thing that kind of reminded you of these decadent train car restaurants from years gone by.
Yeah.
And because it was small. It is small, you know, and it's a passion of ours. We love the food. We encourage our folks in the kitchen to explore and to experiment with things and yet hopefully be consistent enough that people keep coming back and enjoying what they had the prior time.
And you can get caviar there whenever.
No,
you go,
I enjoyed it. And great service too. That's the key. There's the service and the food.
Yeah. It's a good team.
It's a great team.
Yeah, just book your reservations ahead of time. You can't just pop in generally.
January is a really good time to go. Yeah. You know, as in the rest of Missoula, everybody's slow in January.
Yep. So. How did you attract Tagliari to come there? I mean, that's that's a great one.
So let me correct you because they corrected me. It's pronounced Taliere.
Taliere?
Taliere.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm crazy.
So we have enjoyed their other location down on South Higgins.
Yes.
And just always admired what they do. And somehow we ran into them, conversation started.
We started talking to them a long time ago. In fact, I think before Matt Benzel bought it, we were talking to the original owners. And then Matt bought it. And then we started talking to him. And, you know, we've been – so after a couple of years – you know, talking it over, and then we have this new building coming on, and we have the perfect spot for him, and he's like, yep, I think I want to do it. So
best
we're just so
great
excited.
Great guy.
Easily.
So most importantly, as we bring this to a close, how do people get a hold of you? How do they find out about what's going on and what's available and how to move in?
You can go to our website at oldsawmilldistrict.com. And that will give you a link to all of our projects. It'll tell you all about the history, just everything that's going on. You can also go to my real estate website, weatherbygroup.com, or you can call our office at 406-203-3015, and you can reach me there.
Fantastic. Great update, by the way. Great reconnecting with you guys.
Thanks guys.
So
always fun to be here.
Us.
Yep, it's always fun to hear what's going on and what we can look forward to.
Absolutely. Arnie, I'll see you next week.
Scott, next week.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.